a conversation about, okay, so these social media platforms are in Washington, Google and Twitter and Facebook, and they are responding to members of the Congress about what role they had inadvertently or otherwise in the Russian hack and in advertising that we don't fully appreciate. Writing about it in the Wall Street Journal, let me make sure I get the name right here, is John McKinnon. He's a reporter at the Journal, and you can read his piece online or in print today. John, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Really good. I appreciate you joining us. Describe to me the scope of the problem. What literally is Congress trying to figure out?
Well, Congress is trying to figure out what to do about this sort of flood or avalanche of advertising that appears to have come from foreign sources, especially Russia, that may or may not have had any influence on the 2016 election, but is very concerning. It's scary to a lot of people.
It's Russian per se, or is it other places as well?
Well, that's a question that they're exploring today, but certainly all the attention so far has been on Russia. But the, you know, the possibilities out there that some other country could try to do the same thing.
And how exactly were they doing that?
Well, there are lots of ways they were doing it. For instance, on Facebook, there was paid advertising. There were also fake accounts that were set up just to post fake news and other similar information. On Google's YouTube, there were like more than 1,000 videos that were linked to Russian operatives. And Twitter had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of accounts controlled by Russian operatives, and more than 36,000 bots were used to tweet information, you know, true or false, during the election. So just to give you one idea about the scope, Facebook is now estimating as many as 126 million Americans could have seen some or, you know, some of this advertising.
Is it always billed as advertising? That is, would it be a vote for Donald Trump ad that I'm looking at?
No, no, no. A lot of it was not at all advocacy. It was simply highlighting or trying to, you know, cast some light on socially divisive issues.
Right.
You know, issues that are you know, constant sources of trouble for us, but they were trying to exacerbate.
Wasn't that? And I thought that was just such a subtle, kind of intriguing way to do it. If, say, some Russian operatives are pushing out stories about racial unrest in America, that might influence the election. And maybe that means you're going to go with the law and order candidate Donald Trump instead of the left-wing Hillary Clinton. But I don't know, maybe not. Maybe you think he's
right.
He doesn't have the solution. But in fact, that's what they were doing, right?
Yeah, and some of it was actually apparently would have had the effect of inciting Hillary voters. So it's hard to understand exactly what was in the minds of the people that were putting this campaign together sometimes. You know, there's a thought that the Russian leadership thinks that stirring this kind of controversy and stirring dissension in the U.S. would weaken our democracy. And maybe it wasn't really aimed at influencing the outcome of the election in some cases and was just aimed at undermining our democracy.
Maybe it was a test run too, right? I mean, we don't know them being so heavily handed in our election process before. So they gave it a go to see what could happen. And Lord, they, you know, they stirred up a storm, even if they did not have an objective per se. Let me ask you that. Do you think that then the objective of the Russian hacking was to get Donald Trump elected?
I don't think I know enough to make a call on that yet. And that sounds like a cop-out, and it probably is. But
That's what the Mueller investigation's about. I mean, not that this is that.
People are still trying to figure all this out, and that's what the hearing today, the two hearings tomorrow, all the investigations that are going on in Congress, the Mueller investigation. Lots of people are trying to figure out how far this went, what the real motives were, and what the effects were. Now, we're just beginning to learn, you know, as of yesterday and today, that the, you know, the scope of this was a lot bigger than the internet companies had let on. And so, you know, who knows what that leads to. Maybe it's even bigger than we know now.
So. You say bigger than they let on, meaning they didn't know it, or they did, but they didn't want to say.
You know, one person said to me recently that the more they look, the more they find. And so I think it's, you know, these are hard things to figure out. In some cases, you have to trace the original sponsor of a Facebook page, or you have to figure out who set up an account on YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a very painstaking investigation, and it's hard to figure out. And that's why I think that's one reason it's taking so long to figure out.
Hmm. John McKinnon's on the line, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. We're talking about the social media platforms testifying before Congress today. And yet I seem to recall a number that surfaced early on, and that was how much money Facebook benefited by this advertising or fake account creation. And it wasn't a compelling number. Talk about the financial interest that these companies have to figure it out.
None of the dollar figures here are very large. And even the full scope of the reach, if you will, of these campaigns is still tiny in comparison to all the content that, you know, passes through the hands of Facebook every day. You know, we're talking like less than 1% in a lot of cases, far less than 1%.
So it would behoove them to figure this out. It's not like they don't have financial motivation to do this. They can certainly suffer losing some of these bogus accounts, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And is that really what it is, though? So I'll just go set up a fake account. I'm Citizens for a Better America, or I'm John Williams 2, and I'm just going to create an account and then start saying, hey, did you see this thing about Hillary? She doesn't like somebody. You know what I mean? Is that what we're talking about, just a lot of that sort of traffic? Or is it more, would I recognize some of it as advertising?
Right. Right. No, you're absolutely right. A lot of it was not paid for. A lot of it was simply, if you will, phony accounts that were set up that were used to push various messages, various kinds of fake news, all kinds of content that was part of their campaign.
Well, if that's true, and I could see how we would all, I mean, we all know how that is, then everybody's re-forwarding something that supports their beliefs without knowing the truth of it. How in the world is Facebook or Twitter or any of these places going to figure out who's legit and what's real?
Well, it's an enormous problem. It's just it's a terrible problem. It's taken them this long to figure out, you know, the accounts that were linked to the foreign operatives, if you will. And so that figuring out what's linked to a foreign operative is a challenge in itself. But then figuring out, you know, what to do about it once you've discovered it is another set of problems.
Right.
And, you know, they're very concerned, and legitimately so, about restrictions that would be so tight that they would harm the legitimate free speech rights of people in the United States.
Do they argue that if, say, it's a U.S. citizen who just doesn't like somebody, one of the candidates, so I want to put out things that are going to harm their chances to get elected or reelected, I'm going to put stuff out that isn't even true. Do they argue that that person should be able to do that, or should there be some truth to what they say in order to use their platforms?
Well, there's a lot of tough questions there, but it's certainly it's true that for a U.S. person, you can't do anything to restrict that person's right to say what they want to say.
Well, that's a shame. I mean, but you know, that's just pollution. It's garbage. How do you weigh? I'm not saying that. I'm not disagreeing with you. You know, I think the First Amendment is to be preserved at all costs. There should be some restrictions on it. But, geez, what a shame what we've done to the, you know, free flow of information when you can't tell what's true and what's not.
Mm-hmm. But then the tougher questions come with foreign nationals. You know, how do you know whether one of your users, you know, in another country is, you know, being assisted somehow by a government or a hostile force? Power. And what do you do about that? Those are the really tough questions.
Well, here in Chicago, one lawmaker is saying that if you do place an ad on the internet, not, say, a bogus account where you're just chatting, but if you are doing some sort of traditional advertising on the internet and it appears in my Facebook stream or whatever, that it should indicate who that ad was paid for by. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are used to this in broadcast ads. Am I correct, John, that that does not exist on the internet, and should it?
No, it's a confusing landscape there. You're right that those disclaimers are on broadcast ads. The FEC in 2011 started to try to restrict internet companies to the same extent. I believe that Google got a waiver or an exception from the Federal Election Commission, and Facebook sought an exemption. They said basically it's too hard. Some of these ads are so small that you can't practically put a disclaimer on them because there's no room.
Oh, too bad for. Well, I'm sorry. They could do a click through. You could do some sort of hyperlink. I'm not buying that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there's probably ways around that. But anyway, the bottom line is that they have not had to put those disclaimers on their ads up until now.
Yeah.
And certainly there's an effort underway at the Federal Election Commission to, change that rule and put some more teeth in it for the internet companies. And that's probably going
to. One last thing then, John. Are they going to charge these companies to come up with solutions? I know when I asked you about that, you said, yeah, it's really hard to know what to do about it. But mm-hmm. I wonder then how culpable we should find the Facebooks of the world. I mean, they're the victim, like the rest of us, of their own creation. Is it fair to expect them to come up with a workable resolution?
Well, it's still their creation, and they're the ones that run it. And I think that even they acknowledge that they need to do more.
Yeah.
They're trying to come up with the right balance of restrictions that doesn't, impede people's legitimate rights to free expression.
Do you think this investigation, what the Congress is doing here with the heads of, Google and Facebook, is that going to intersect somehow with the Mueller investigation? I mean, they're kind of looking at the same horse from different angles. Will these things intersect somehow?
I think so. The Mueller team is clearly very interested in this area as well. And, there's been some reporting to suggest that Facebook in particular, maybe the other companies, I don't know, but if you get down to the bottom of what's there, you might be able to see some evidence of collusion if it's there. And, I certainly have no idea whether it's really there or not. But there is some thinking that when you get to the bottom of the information barrel that Facebook has in particular, you could find some evidence suggesting, confirming the collusion. But again, I don't know if that's true or not.
And they're testifying today. I'll let you get back to viewing it. Maybe we could visit again this week or next. But it's fascinating and ever so complicated stuff. I appreciate you helping us figure it out, John.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks so much.
John McKinnon writes in the Wall Street Journal. You can read him there today.